This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Know-How is brought to you by CashFly.
This episode of Know-How is brought to you by Unity, the free personal media server. With Unity, you can access, stream, and share any media stored on your computers from your mobile devices. For more information and to download Unity for free, visit getunity.com/knowhow. That's getunity.com/knowhow. And by the Ring Video Doorbell. With Ring, you can see and talk to anyone at your door from anywhere in the world using your smartphone. It's like caller ID for your house. Right now, get free expedited FedEx shipping when you go to ring.com/knowhow. On today's show,
you'll know how to celebrate the Raspberry Pi.
It's the TWiT show where we build, ban, break, and upgrade. I'm Father Robert Ballister.
And Brian Burnett.
And for the next 45 minutes or so, we're going to take you through some of the projects that we've been building so you can take them home and geek out on your own.
That's right. Today's a very special day, Pi Day.
It is. It's March 14th. You know what that means.
Pi Day.
Pi Day. 3.14. It's a celebration of all things Raspberry Pi. And so that's what we've got cooked up for you. We've got a project each that we've done with Raspberry Pi. Plus, we've got a feedback that strikes near and dear to the hearts of everyone who's ever wanted to figure out how long they can make a Raspberry Pi or any electrical device run on a battery.
That's right. And I'm going to put you on the spot. How many decimals of pi can you recite, Padre?
3.14. That's
boom.
It. I don't have any of the other ones.
All right, phew.
I used to be able to do it.
As far as I can get, yeah.
I used to be able to get out to like 16 or 17 digits, right, but then that knowledge went away.
Just enough so that you can get the circumference of a circle. I'm done.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's close.
I can get close enough. How about that?
Yeah, okay.
All right. Now, Brian... We sent you out with a very specific mission. We wanted you to stop Burke from sneaking into the no-hole.
That's right, yeah, because we actually have a new setup, the no-hole 2.0.
It's like 3.0, actually.
3.0, yeah.
We got kicked out of the original no-hole, and then we got into the new no-hole. And actually, this is like 3.5?
Yes.
Because also we were encroaching on Burke's... Should we tell the Twit Army this story?
Yes, we should. Okay. Because I don't even know if Burke noticed.
So we had originally, when we were kicked out of the old no-hole, we were moved into a space right next to Burke's desk. So every week we moved his desk a little bit further
away. Just a few
away,
inches.
And we would expand the no-hole. Yeah. And so by the end of our time in that area, I think we had moved his desk probably about 6 feet.
At least. Yeah. At the very least. Yeah. Never noticed. But this time, since the other company that was occupying the basement moved out, we have our own cage. And this is by far the best no-hole that we've had. We've got the arcade machine down there. We've got all our stuff set up.
Bag,
3D printer.
Oh, yeah.
Get a lot of work done down there. But because of that... It has lured the Burke into our no-hole, and I wanted to set up a security cam so he couldn't sneak up on me and that he couldn't, like, go in there, or, you know, not just Burke, go in there and take stuff out of there.
And luckily, that fit hand-in-hand with this idea of having a Pi Day episode, because you can actually turn a Raspberry Pi into a pretty competent security camera.
Yes. Well, when I first tried this project, it was with the Raspberry Pi 1. And it worked, but it was painful. The poor Raspberry Pi.
The frame rate was horrible.
The first Raspberry Pi is really getting long in the tooth now. And then the Raspberry Pi 2 is just such a big improvement over that the software that I used for the security cam ran perfectly on the Raspberry Pi 2.
And, of course, one of the nice things about the fact that they've kept the same system on a chip. So you've gone from the Broadcom .5 to the .6 to the .7 now, system on a chip. It means that any software that you've written for Raspberry Pi 1 will actually run on Raspberry Pi 3 just a lot faster. In fact, the exact numbers are, I know the original, the 2 was 5 times faster than the original Pi, and the 3, depending on how you clock it, how you benchmark it, it's between 2 and 4 times faster than the 2. So this could be between 10 and 20 times faster than the original Pi. And the wonderful thing about it is it's the same price. The original one was $35. This is $35.
But it just came out, and I think there's already price gouging going on.
Like, yeah, there's always not as much, because the Raspberry Pi Foundation has done an excellent job. And actually, if you go back 2 weeks and watch the new screensavers, I had a conversation with the CEO of the Raspberry Pi Foundation, and he told me that because this was the anniversary model, they wanted to do the launch the way they wanted to do the launch of the first Raspberry Pi. Because when they did that launch, they were completely surprised by the demand.
Right.
It was a runaway hit. They couldn't make enough. In fact, we had an interesting intersection. He was interviewed on Triangulation, and I had a chance to speak with him after the show. And I was looking forward to seeing him at DEF CON, because he was going to bring a huge amount of Raspberry Pis to Nevada. And it turned out he wasn't able to make it. He and his wife just couldn't get the parts. So they wanted to do this one right. And so they had made sure that they had quality control. They made sure that they had enough components. They had enough parts. And they were in the hands of their distributors. So right now, if you want to buy a Raspberry Pi 3, you can. The price might be a tiny bit inflated, but nowhere near what you normally get.
Nice. And even beyond it being a better performer than the Raspberry Pi 2, the thing I like most about it is the integrated Wi-Fi and Bluetooth on it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Because this is such a nice, svelte device. And so, for example, like this is our little portable enclosure that we've had. One of the issues has been you have to plug in the USB dongle for the Wi-Fi, maybe another USB dongle for a wireless mouse and keyboard. That can all be built in now. So you could have this completely devoid of dongles and still have it connected to the internet and still have it connected to a keyboard and a mouse.
And I love that they kept everything pretty much in the same spots. Like, there's nothing moved around, so any of your old Pi cases will work with it.
Right. So if we go to the action cam here, Alex, you'll see that the mounting points are the same. They look identical. This is the 2 and this is the 3. They did that on purpose because they want any accessory that you've made. So, for example, my 3D cases, the wiring harnesses that I've created, the GPIO header is the same, the port locations are the same, and the mounting points where it would fit into, say, this 3D enclosure are the same. And I think that's an excellent strategy because it means people will be able to preserve the investment they've made into building things for the Raspberry Pi.
Yeah, no, I like it a lot. It's cool.
Yeah, yeah. Now, Brian,
yeah,
what I want to do, though, is I want to see the inner workings of a Raspberry Pi security camera. I want to see how you put it together, and I want to see how it works. Mm-hmm. You think we could do that?
Yeah, I think so. Just a heads up, Burke figured it out by the end of it. So you might want to do a better job disguising your webcam, but you know, it worked pretty good for a couple weeks.
It did. It was up there. That wasn't the best surveillance job I've seen, but yeah, okay.
Well, you know. Yeah. But yeah, if you want to know how to put it together, watch this video.
So to start your Raspberry Pi security cam project, all you're going to need is a Raspberry Pi. I'm using a Model B Revision 2 with 512 megabytes of RAM, a micro SD card, 8 gigabytes or higher, a webcam. I'm using a Logitech HD webcam, C520, and a USB that you can use for external power. Now, as far as setting up your Raspberry Pi for the first boot, downloading the OS, I'm going to be using Raspbian, Jesse, the light version, which means it doesn't have a GUI. I'm going to be running the security cam program, and I don't really need to have an interface OS, so I'm downloading the light version. Once you have extracted the image from the zip file, you can use WinDisk Imager to write to the SD card. It's going a lot quicker than it does in real life through the magic of editing, but it doesn't take too long. Take your SD card, plug it into the Raspberry Pi, plug in all your other accessories, keyboard, mouse, webcam, Ethernet, and finally power. Now you're going to be first greeted with a Raspberry Pi login. All default login information for Raspberry Pi is username, Pi, password, Raspberry. Once you've done that, one of the first commands you're going to want to run is ifconfig. That's going to bring up the IP address that your Pi is using on your local network. In my case, it's 10.140.8.79. That's the IP that we're going to need for logging into the Pi through SSH, which is the next step that we need to take by typing in raspi sudo raspi dash config. That'll bring you to the Raspberry Pi configuration tool menu. Go into advanced settings, go down to SSH and turn on SSH. This way you'll be able to log in remotely from your PC to your Raspberry, which is handy if you either don't have a monitor or if you're going to be setting up this security cam in a more remote place and you want to be able to get to it over your network. Now, if you're on Windows like me, you'll download PuTTY, which is a free program for using SSH connections. And in this case, for the host name, all you'll do is type in the IP address that you got earlier on port 22. And again, in my case, it's 10.140.8.79, and click connect. Once you do, you'll be greeted with the login as, and like before, Pi with the password Raspberry. And the first thing you're going to want to do is, now that you have this nice bigger screen to play with, you can now do sudo apt-get update. What this will do is fetch all the updates that you need for getting your Raspberry Pi set up. This will take about a half an hour, so sit back, relax for a little while, and then once it's done doing the update, you can do sudo apt-get upgrade, and that'll make sure that everything's fully upgraded and up to date. So the next command you're going to want to do is the actual install for the motion software, which is sudo apt-get install motion. Hit enter, hit Y for yes, and then it will start downloading and installing motion onto our Raspberry Pi. And this is the software we need for the security cam. Another handy command that you can do is lsusb, and that will list the devices currently hooked up to your Raspberry Pi via USB. So in my case, you can see the Logitech HD webcam C510 on the list. And if you're having trouble detecting your webcam, run this command just to double check if the Raspberry Pi is seeing it. The next command you're going to want to run is sudo nano /etc/motion/motion.conf. Here's where you can set all the different options for your security cam software. And there's a lot of granular little settings that you can do. But off the bat, if you just want to get this project started, there's just a couple that you kind of have to fiddle with. Now, because I'm running on the Raspberry Pi 2, I can change the frame rate to 30. If I was on the Raspberry Pi 1, max frame rate I was able to get was 15. You can also set user password for logging into the software, change the contrast, the saturation on the camera. You can set different areas of motion detection and things like that. You can set where recordings of videos will go, where photos will be saved to. If you're like me and you just want to get this project up and running and not necessarily bog down your system right off the bat and just make sure it's working right, you're going to want to disable image output photos just off the bat to make sure everything's working right, because I had issues where the Raspberry Pi was saving photos and saving video and crashing. I would suggest turning off output photos or output_pictures, turn off the FFmpeg output movies. And these options you can change later depending on what you want to do. Now, by default, the stream port is 8081. That'll come in handy later when we're looking for the camera scene. And then you can change the maximum frame rate for the stream, so that's what you'll be seeing when you go to the IP address, to 30 if you're using the Raspberry Pi 2, which worked fine for me. If you want to access your Raspberry Pi from something outside, you'll want to turn the stream localhost off. And that's it. Hit Control X to exit and Y to save your work and enter, and then you'll be brought back to the main terminal page. Now you can do, the next step you'll want to do is to make the motion software start up with boot. So in case your Raspberry Pi gets turned off by accident or it reboots, it'll start the motion soft at the beginning. So type in sudo nano /etc/default/motion. And then in this file, you can set motion daemon to yes. By default, it's no if you don't want it to start at boot up. But if you do want it to start at boot, which I do, type in yes and hit Control X to exit and Y to save. Now type in sudo reboot, and when your Pi starts back up again, you should see the little light on your webcam light up, signaling that it's receiving video. Then if you go to any computer on your network and you go into a web browser and type in the IP address and then colon 8 0.081, which is the default port, you should see an image of what the Raspberry Pi is seeing. So this is the security footage that you'll be receiving. There's a timestamp at the bottom, and I have it running at 30 frames per second, so pretty smooth. So now that you've got your security cam footage working, you're going to want to have to disguise your security cam. I definitely went the cheap route, found just a little box, cardboard box, did some very precise measuring with a quarter and a Sharpie pen. I'm sure there's going to be plenty of people who can disguise their security cameras better, but since I was just doing a quick and dirty project, it's not so bad. And here, to protect the no-hole, there's a bunch of boxes outside, so I was able to kind of disguise it with a bunch of other boxes. And here you can see the security cam is all set up. I've got it stashed away up on top of some boxes, and now I can see Burke's trying to sneak up on me while I'm working in the no-hole. In the future, I'll do some more digging into the configuration file to set up motion to trigger and send me an email alert or save the photo if it sees motion. But for the time being, this is just a simple, quick way of getting the security cam up and running.
So that wasn't as complicated as I thought it was.
No, it's not too bad. All the motion software that you basically have to set up is just tweak a couple of those settings, but it's plug and play now with the USB camera and everything.
And I have to say, because I played with the motion package a long, long time ago, it is very much matured. I just recently looked at it again. I'm like, oh, okay, they fixed a lot of the things that people didn't like about it.
Yes, and the nice thing is it doesn't take a lot of work to get it set up, but if you want to get super granular and like get into the nitty-gritty with some of the settings, all of that is still available.
Right. And, you know, one of the other nice things about that kind of a package is you can use as many or as few of the features as you want. If you just want it to be a camera that you can access over the internet, that's very easy to do.
Right.
But then you go ahead and you add in, like, okay, the motion zones, and I want to do motion detection here and here.
Right.
That's when you can really kind of geek out.
Yeah.
I will say, the first time I played with this, I would mess up the configuration. And I couldn't get it back, so I would just end up doing a reinstallation of everything.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm glad that that's not such a problem anymore.
No, I haven't had that issue at all. It's been pretty easy to work with. The only thing I wish it had is smell-o-vision, because I'm sure it would smell Burke before it would see it.
Indeed.
He's going to kill me.
Oh, folks, don't forget that if you want to do this project, we're going to have step-by-step instructions as well as the parts list on our show notes page.
Mm-hmm.
Again, that's at twit.tv/KH. Hey, Brian, you know what I want to do next?
What's that?
I want to do some feedback.
Feedback? Yeah.
From our Google Plus questions, our answers?
Totally.
A little bit of that. But before we do that, let's go ahead and talk about an exciting sponsor, one that I'm very happy to have as part of the know-how community. It's Unity. Have you heard of Unity?
I have, yeah.
Now, imagine this. Imagine you were able to take all of your media, all of your pictures, all the things that you want to consume, your content from all your different devices, and then just watch it on your mobile.
I love that idea, yeah.
It is a great idea, and it's exactly what Unity empowers. Unity is probably the best way to consolidate your library into one easy-to-use, internet-accessible database of goodness. Now, I could talk about the frustration of having my movies and my videos and my pictures every which way, on every computer, different servers, different types of servers, different types of media, but I'm going to skip that and just talk about what Unity can do, because Unity solves all that frustration. It lets you stream your entire music collection to your mobile device, even iTunes music. It lets you stream your movie collection while you're traveling. It lets you share any of your media with your friends via peer-to-peer tech, and your friends can stream it directly from your computer. You can install Unity on every computer you want to access, and Unity will unify all your media and files into one organized menu in your Unity app. You can also automatically merge your iTunes account. If you're one of these people who has multiple accounts, maybe one for you, one for your wife, one for the kids, maybe you have that separate one that you use for work because you don't want to combine your work apps with your personal apps. Well, you can merge those iTunes accounts and libraries, which makes it great for families and for spouses. You can also access all of your Lightroom or Apple photo libraries and photo albums, and you can post photos stored on your computer directly to Instagram. You can stream and share your GoPro videos. You can even use AirPlay to stream music or video to your TV. Folks, if you have media, you need Unity. Now, here's what we want you to do. We want you to create your own private personal media server at getunity.com/knowhow. That's getunity.com/knowhow. Do it today and access all your media and files on your mobile devices for free. Again, that's GET youunity.com/knowhow. And we thank Unity for their support of KnowHow. Hey, Brian.
Yeah?
You know, we had a member of our Google Plus group who asked an exceptionally good question, one that I think we've touched on in the show. We've actually done the math, but I think we need to go more in-depth now.
Okay.
What do you
okay.
think? So what do we got?
All right. This one comes from 52 Degrees. I'm trying to figure out the battery life for my lighting project, and I am hoping you guys can help me out. I have a Lohas 100-watt LED chip, which is being powered by a 5200 milliamp 30C LiPo. I used a LM2577 power converter to get from 12 volts to 35 volts. While simply knowing the answer would be nice, I'd really like to know how the math works so I can do it myself in the future.
This is an exceptionally good question. Yeah. And again, you've probably heard us talk about this. Remember West Virginia?
Yes.
Watts equals volts times amps.
Is that Ohm's law?
It's West Virginia. That's
West
how
Virginia.
I know.
That's okay. how you know.
Don't mess me up. I mean, you can get really, really complicated. But if you just know that, if you know West Virginia, it makes it a lot easier to do many of these calculations that we do on a daily basis when mm-hmm. we're trying to figure out how much power we need, how much battery storage we need,
right.
and whether or not the circuits that we build can handle the amount of power we push through them.
So something that's good to know offhand, yeah.
Offhand. So let's set a couple of terms. When we're talking about a watt, what that means is it's a unit of energy over time. So mm-hmm. it's both an amount of energy and the time that energy is used or created or dispelled.
Okay, right.
When we talk about a volt and an amp, I think the best way for me to visualize that for you is think of a wave, like an ocean wave.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you have an ocean wave that's like this. Volt would be how big the waves are. So if you have 1 volt, it's very small waves. Mm-hmm. You have 100 volts, and the waves go higher and higher, right?
Right.
When I think of amps, I'm thinking how much water there is in the wave.
Okay.
So I can increase both. I could have a very small wave, but it has an enormous amount of water. The wave is really, really wide.
Right.
Or I could have a super high wave that doesn't have much water, so it's a very narrow but high wave.
Right.
Right? So think of that, because that's a really good way to picture what the relationship is.
Okay.
A volt with an amp combined together with those two measurements, it tells me how much power I can get.
Right.
Or how much power I'm using, how much power is available to me.
Isn't if you were ever to get electrocuted, it's the amps that you have to be worried about, not so much the voltage?
Usually, yeah. I mean, that's why like tasers can operate at 1,000,000 volts,
right.
but it's next to no amps.
Right.
It's enough to incapacitate you. It basically just scrambles the electrical system of your body. But without the current there, without that the wideness of the wave, uh-huh. it won't kill you.
That still sounds horrible.
It's don't do it. It's actually, folks, if you want, go to YouTube and look for Ryan Ballister Taser. He's my brother, and I'm holding the camera. If you want to see what happens to someone when they get tased, that's a great video to go watch.
I love that video.
All right. For example, let's go ahead and Alex, if you go to my computer, let's take a 100 watt bulb. All right. So if I have a 100 watt bulb, I have to be asking myself, how much power am I going to need to provide? How long will a battery last powering this device? So 100 watts, I already know that I'm going to need some combination of volts and amps to be 100. Mm-hmm. So let's connect this to a battery. And there's a couple of different ways I could do this. I could supply 100 volts and 1 amp. Because remember, watts equals volts times amps.
Right.
And that will give me 100 watts.
Okay.
And that will light that bulb.
That makes sense.
Okay. I could also give it 1 volt 100 and 100 amps.
Okay.
Same thing. I'm giving it 100 watts.
Hmm.
Now, it's not exactly the same. This is why, like for example, in quadcopter design,
mm-hmm.
you don't see huge, huge craft that use 3S batteries. Because once you start getting the power demands incredibly high, it's easier to use high voltage rather than high amperage.
Okay.
Because I can, like, for example, remember when we were talking about our ESCs? Our ESCs are rated for how much current they can handle.
Right.
Well, a 20-amp ESC may only be able to provide a certain amount of watts at a certain voltage. Mm-hmm. But if I raise the voltage instead of the amperage, it could still handle it versus blowing up.
Okay.
All right.
Makes sense.
Okay. So now, all of these scenarios are going to give me 100 watts. So I could, for example, go 10 volts, 10 amps, and it's still going to be 100 watts. You have to remember this principle. When you're designing your electrical circuit, you're going to decide how you're going to power it. And if you know how many watt hours it needs, in other words, how many watts over the course of an hour, because remember, it's a unit of energy over time, then I can design my circuit equivalently.
Okay.
If I'm going to use a low voltage circuit, I'm going to need to push a lot of amps. If I'm using a higher voltage circuit, I can reduce the amount of amps.
Okay, that makes sense.
All right. Now let's take a look at what our community member actually asked about. He has a 100-watt LED.
Okay.
And he has a battery. And he said the battery is a 5,300 milliamp hour 3S, which means 11.1 volts.
Got it.
30C LiPo. Okay. Now, all of those numbers mean things. Now, let's let's decipher what those things mean. The first thing is, again, watts equals volts times amps. Let's go back to West Virginia, and let's look at the first thing that we need to break down. The first thing is, he has 11.1 volts, and he has 5.3 amp hours, which is the same thing as 5,300 milliamp hours.
Okay. Right?
So 5,300 thousandth of an hour, amp hour, is the same thing as 5.3 amp hours.
I see.
Okay. So watts equals 11.1 volts times 5.3 amp hours, which gives us, 58.73 watt hours of capacity. That's how much how much power is stored inside that lithium polymer battery.
Okay, 58.73 watt hours.
So and that calculation is relatively easy, right?
Right.
Okay, so let's look at the next one. The next one is the safe current draw, and that's what that C number is. A lot of people don't know what the C number on their LiPo is.
30 Celsius?
No. Okay. That would be kind of cool. the C is, what is the maximum safe current draw? And in this particular case, that replaces the amps. So this tells me the safe current draw is 11.1 volts times 30 amps. So that means I can safely draw 333 watts from this battery before I blow it up.
Okay, any more than that. If you were to do more volts, it would destroy the battery.
You would hurt. Well, I mean, if you were to do more, I mean, any combination that would increase over that wattage.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's only going to provide you 11.1 volts.
Okay.
But if I had an application that would pull more, first, I'm not going to get more because the chemistry will start to break down. Secondly, every time I do that, I'm damaging the battery.
Okay.
And so it puffs up and no way.
Eventually die, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So here's the fun part. Now, when I'm working out how long it will last, I take the capacity, which is 58.83 watt hours, and I divide it by the full draw, so 333 watt hours, and then I multiply that by 60 because there's 60 minutes in an hour,
right?
Which means I can run this at its full draw for 10.6 minutes.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds like average flight time.
That's the average flight time of a quadcopter, right? Because that's how much power I'm drawing out, and that tells me how fast can I safely deplete this battery. It would be in about 10.6 minutes.
Okay. Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah, exactly. So at our maximum draw of 333 watt hours, the battery is drained in 10.6 minutes. However, that's not the end.
What?
Yeah, because now let's connect it to this LED, because we got to do some math here. We're connecting positive to positive, negative to negative.
Got it.
And now we get the runtime is equal to the battery capacity divided by the draw. And I know my draw is 100 watts. That's how much it's going to draw. I also know this, and this is why it was important to calculate the C value. Since 100 is less than 333, I know that I can safely power this LED off the battery without risking any damage.
Now, if you had four LEDs,
that would be bad, because my max draw would be 400 watts. The battery can only safely do 333.
Got it.
So what I would do is I would run two batteries in parallel in order to up my maximum to 666 watt hours.
Cool. Okay.
Okay. So I've got runtime equals battery capacity divided by draw times 60.
Because that's the number of minutes in an hour.
Exactly. And that gives me this. 58.83 watt hours divided by 100 watt hours times 60 gives me 35.298 minutes. That means if I have a full battery and I connect this LED to the battery, I can run it for 35.298 minutes until the battery is completely dead.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Problem.
What?
First of all, there's a margin of safety.
Because you don't want to draw your battery all the way to zero?
Well, that comes later. But the margin of safety is the batteries will never perform as rated.
Right.
There's always inefficiencies in the system. So, he, for example, he's using a voltage converter. Mm-hmm. That's gonna take away from the efficiency. I like to take away 20%. 20% is a nice, safe margin. Mm-hmm. It means there's always a little bit left in the tank, even after I've done all my safety calculations. So if I were to take 20% away from this runtime, I'm down to 27 minutes. But I also know that you don't ever want to run a LiPo all the way down to nothing.
Right.
Bad things happen when you do that. You destroy the lifespan, that you can't recharge it as much. So I typically only like to run my batteries down 50%. You can go a little further, but I wouldn't go much further.
Mm-hmm.
So at 50% rundown, we're talking about 13.5 minutes. So after he connects his LED to this battery, he's got about 13.5 minutes of total safe runtime.
Right. That's a good budget of your resources.
Exactly. Exactly. Now, something else to remember about this is that 13.5 gets me to 50% with also a 20% margin, which also in the back of my head lets me know if I want to run this 20 minutes, I can run it 20 minutes safely still.
Right.
But at least this tells me when I should stop.
Right, right.
Yeah. Oh, we've actually got a practical example of this, because if you remember when we did the episode with that guy who created the light array, mm-hmm. it was like 10 100 watt LEDs.
Right.
He had multiple 5300 milliamp hour packs. Mm-hmm. And he could only run the thing for about 5 minutes
without destroying the batteries.
The batteries.
Those things had huge heat sinks on the back of them too.
It's a lot of heat dissipation. So yeah, that's the basic formula. What do you say we actually put it to the test?
Yeah, I'm up for that.
Okay, so that was a theoretical on paper thing. But
right.
The question a lot of people are going to have is, well, how do I get my actual draw? There are a lot of devices that may report a draw, but I'm not sure if it's accurate.
Mm-hmm.
There are other devices that don't actually have any rating for the draw. And the answer is...
Multimeter.
If you've got even a cheap multimeter, it will be able to measure the current.
And then you can use that for the equation to figure out
the equations. Exactly. You can just plug it in exactly as we have it. So
cool.
If you go to the action cam, Alex, I've got my multimeter here. What I want is this, DCA. So that's the amperage, DC amperage versus V, which gives me the voltage. So I don't need to measure the voltage. I know the voltage on this is going to be 5 volts.
Okay.
I need to measure how many amps I'm going to be drawing. So I'm going to take this, and I'm going to go ahead and turn it down to that. It's changing the scale. It's just telling, because sometimes the number's really, really, really small.
Okay.
Actually, if you go to the overhead, Alex, it's probably going to give you a better view of this. And what I'm going to do, if you actually, here, go back so I can see where this is pointed. I need to put this in line in the circuit. That's the only way that this is going to be able to measure the current. So
right.
The current has to run through the multimeter in order for the multimeter to be able to measure what the draw actually is.
So from the battery to the multimeter to the device that you're powering?
Perfect. Exactly. That's exactly how it's going to work. So what I've done here, again, if you go to the overhead, is I've got the black is plugged into the common, and I've got my red plugged into the milliamp. Because I know this is not going to be drawing much. Now, be careful with this, because if you're measuring milliamps and your device pulls like 10 amps, you will pop the meter.
Oh, okay.
You have to be at least close
okay.
to what you're going to be measuring.
But if you're working with quad batteries, you should be fine.
You should be okay, yeah. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to go ahead and pull the negative lead here, like that.
Ooh.
And then I brought a couple of cables to help me out. I'm going to run this through here. And it's going to go into my positive lead, like so. And I'm going to take my negative lead, and I'm looping it back into the ground circuit.
Okay.
So what I've got now is, when I connect this battery, it's going to go, the red goes straight in.
Mm-hmm.
But then the ground is coming through the meter before it loops back over to the battery.
Right.
Okay, so I should be able to detect how much power this Raspi is actually drawing when I turn it on.
And when a Raspberry Pi is rated at, what, like 5 volts, 2 amps or something?
Well, the 2 is.
Yeah.
But what it's rated for isn't necessarily what it draws all the time.
Because it probably depends on what you're using it for, resources it's drawing from.
The faster the processor needs to run, it's going to be drawing more power. Right. The more devices that are connected. Do you have a Wi-Fi dongle connected? Do you have a screen connected?
Like the upper limit then that they list?
Right. So what they list is how much it can handle. So the new one, which they say you should have a 5-volt, 2.5-amp power supply. Mm-hmm. They're saying because of the onboard Wi-Fi and because of all the accessories you're probably going to plug into it, it can safely supply 2.5 amps of total power, total draw current through the system. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean that's how much it's taking.
Right.
All right. So let's plug this in. How's that look, Alex?
I lost the action cam.
Action cam, what are you doing?
Did action cam turn off? maybe action cam is tired.
Action cam's been doing a lot of work today.
You know what? I think we drained action cam.
Sorry. Oh, do we need a new battery for action cam?
That's okay. We'll do it this way. So can you go to the overhead, Alex? Okay, so there we go. Now we can see what the number is. Let me go ahead and plug this in, and hopefully nothing sparks. Like so. Okay, so I'm up to 37.1, 37. It's probably at 60.8. I've got nothing, absolutely nothing connected to this Raspberry right now. There's not even an SD card, I didn't want it to boot. With a complete empty state, this is pulling 60.9 milliamps.
So
it's next to nothing. When I get this worked up, it will start pulling like an amp.
Right. Because basically the only thing that's happening right here is that the LEDs are on.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's the power that the LEDs take, and the CPU, which is looking, it's like, there's no SD card. What am I supposed to do?
Right.
That's what it's doing. It's sitting there and it's just in a continuous cycle saying, is there an SD card? Is there an SD card? Is there an SD card?
No.
Exactly.
No. Yeah.
But this gives us enough to run into our equation. So we know that we're going to be pulling about 60 milliamps, and we know we're pulling at 5 volts.
60 milliamps, bare minimum.
Bare minimum. But in this state, if I've got this connected to a 2200 milliamp hour 11.1, that's a 3S LiPo battery, let's run it through the same equations. Mm-hmm. That means our LiPo has 11.1 volts times 2.2 amps. That gives us 24.42 watt hours of power. The Pi pulls 5 volts at 0.06 amps, which is 0.3 watt hours. So if I divide that into my power source, it means we could run this Pi for 80.6 hours on this battery down to dead.
But it would be kind of worthless because
it's not doing anything. Right. So if I were to actually plug this into a Pi that was doing something, it would probably go up to an amp, maybe 1.2 amps, which would drop the run time, down to...
I get a Pi.
Well, I don't want to blow up your...
Oh, you don't want to blow up my Pi?
No. I don't want to blow... Actually, we probably could do that. Let's see.
That's always what I like to hear. It could blow up your Pi. Let's improv and see what happens.
Let's see what happens when... Go ahead and disconnect your power, because you don't want two power sources at the same time.
All right.
This blows up, just remember that Brian asked for this. So it's his...
It's my little security Pi.
There we go. Okay, so...
I do feel bad about just pulling the power cable and not sending the shutdown sequence.
It really doesn't like that. Okay, let's see what you're pulling over here.
Okay, so right now, when it boots up, it'll load the SD card with the Raspbian OS. And it should start motion automatically, too. So.
Right. Okay, there might be sparks. If there's sparks, then you're going to have to redo the camera.
Why would there be sparks?
Well, see, automatically. Whoa.
Yeah. A lot more.
So we're at 100. And, oh, there's one. Oh, okay. So it's off scale. It's off scale. Yep, I got to switch. So I'm going to let me do that. I was pulling too much. So, I am now one. Oh, wait. There we go. I'm on the wrong scale. There we go.
Okay. So now we're... Ooh.
5.7. 200M. Ooh. It's not doing anything right now, and we're already... we can't be pulling 4.8 amps. I've got my scale off.
You think so?
Yeah, my scale is way off.
Well, it's also got the webcam. I'm going to see if it powered up the webcam. I taped it in here. It's
the webcam is what's drawing most of the power.
Yeah, no, the webcam's on, so it's definitely working.
Yeah, that's what it's doing. Okay.
So yeah, I've got this webcam hooked up to it. Ethernet. I don't know how much power that would be taking up.
So obviously, this is pulling a significant more amount of power. And actually, let me do the math real quick. So this battery would power that system for an hour and a half.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a lot less than 80 hours.
Yeah, that's a lot less than 80 hours, but that gives you an idea if you want to set up like a portable like spy cam for just an hour.
Exactly. And also, it tells you that like for our portable system here, mm-hmm. That's what we have to consider when we build this out, because I was originally going to put a 1,000 milliamp hour battery in here, but then I did the math. I'm like, that's only going to power it for 3 hours. I want to power this thing for at least 6 or 7 hours.
Right.
I actually even considered putting a 5,000 milliamp hour battery in there, but that would be prohibitively big.
Okay. Yeah, no, this is a smart way to do it. And I guess it would also help you consider not just the device, what the device is pulling, but the things you have connected to it, like the webcam.
Yeah. All right, so folks, again, don't mind me and my bad scale. I'm looking at it upside down, but you understand this. Look at the instructions for your multimeter. Not all multimeters will work the same. You'll see, find a lot of the same functions, but just make sure that you have everything plugged in properly.
We might need to do like a little multimeter segment.
Yeah, that wouldn't be bad.
Maybe that'd be like a YouTube special or something.
That was actually pulling like 500 milliamps. It's half an amp. It's all good.
Okay.
When we come back, we've got a little surprise for you. Do you remember this?
What is that?
The official Raspi, the 7-inch touchscreen?
It's actually a really nice little screen.
It's actually a fantastic kit. We finally did the instructions for it because there's a dearth of instructions. It's a great kit, but there's like no instructions in the box, and instructions on the internet were a little haphazard. So we're going to do a step-by-step guide on how to put this thing together, and we're actually going to make something kind of cool with it.
Nice.
But before we do that, you know what I want to do, Brian?
What's that?
I want to talk a little bit about Ring.
Ah, the security cam.
The security cam. Now, Ring is possibly the best thing I've ever found for my home security because it's not just a doorbell. It's a peace of mind. Now, this is what's inside the kit. When you buy yourself a Ring, you're going to get not just the Ring video doorbell, but you're going to get all the tools you need to install it, including the drill bit, the level, the charging cable. And inside the Ring itself, you're going to find a way to charge it. Two ways, actually. The first way is if you have a doorbell, if you have an actual physical button, you could connect this to it, and it will convert that power into something that keeps your Ring forever charged up. If not, if you're installing this in a brand new installation where there is no power, you just connect a micro USB cable to that port right there. You see, what the Ring Video Doorbell does is it gives you a way to have a two-way conversation with someone who rings the doorbell. So you come to my house, you ring the doorbell. What's going to happen is I will get a notification on my phone saying there's an action. Someone has requested a call from your house. If I accept, I get to see them through the high-definition camera. I get to hear them, and I actually get to speak with them. That's cool.
There's a package that I am very anxiously awaiting this Saturday, and I know that when the guy comes, and I'm going to want to say, hey, can you drop it off in like behind the bush there so that people don't just try and take it off the doorstep?
That's actually fun. And actually, I like to do the whole, they say, oh, we tried to stop by your house at 4:30, and like, no, you didn't.
I would have a record of it if you had. Yeah.
And that's the other part. It's got a motion sensor. So even if they don't ring the bell, if they come into range of the motion sensor, which you can set, you can customize, the Ring will automatically take video, and if you have the subscription plan, will upload it to the cloud. You can watch it on your phone. You can watch it on your desktop. You can download it to save it for later. We use this example all the time. My parents' home in Las Vegas, we had our neighbor coming over to plug his air conditioner into our outside socket.
Right.
Which is kind of, that's rude. That's a little bit rude.
But at least then your dad was able to talk to him, right?
Yeah, and say, hey, look, hey, Frank, I got this video.
What are you doing,
looks
man?
Like you. Yeah. I'm not sure. Weird thing. We were gone. It's like our air conditioner was on the whole time.
Yeah, it's so weird. Our electricity bill was through the roof.
Folks, it's not just for that. It's really for the worst case scenarios. If you're worried like I am about my parents in Las Vegas, if you're worried about someone casing the house, ringing the bell to find out if someone is home, to see if maybe now is a good time to burgle the location, the Ring Video Doorbell is the thing that you need to prevent that. Why not try the device that both Time Magazine and USA Today called one of the best gadgets? Go to ring.com/knowhow for free expedited FedEx shipping. That's ring.com/knowhow. know-how. And remember, with Ring, you're always home. And we thank Ring for their support of know-how. Hey, Brian.
Yeah?
You know what I want to do now?
What's that?
I want Alex to push the magic button and show these good folks how to build the Raspi official 7-inch touchscreen.
There are plenty of touchscreens that you can use with your Raspberry Pi, but there's only one official 7-inch touchscreen, and it's actually a decent kit that comes with all the screws, spacers, cables, and adapters that you need to get your Raspi connected. For this build, we're going to need a Raspberry Pi. If you can get a hold of one, I suggest the Raspberry Pi 3 Model B, but if you can't get a hold of that, go ahead and use the Pi 2 Model B version 1.1. It has 5 times the power of the original Pi, and if you're going to pair a Pi with a relatively expensive screen, you might as well make the project worth the effort. The only tools you'll need is a medium-sized Phillips screwdriver and a pair of pliers. Everything else is in the box. Start by connecting the large display ribbon from the screen to the back of the adapter board. The design uses a zero insertion force connector, which requires you to gently pull out the tab, insert the cable, and press the tab back into the socket to secure the cable. Now connect the small cable to the small connector on the front of the adapter board. These are the leads for the touchscreen element. Insert the cable into the ZIF socket, then snug the tab to secure the cable. Take the 4 standoffs and finger tighten them through the adapter into the 4 mounts at the center of the rear of the screen, making sure that the Raspi logo on the adapter board is visible. Reach into your kit and get the DSi ribbon cable. This is the cable that will connect the adapter board to the Raspberry Pi. Connect one end to the adapter board, contact side up, and secure it into the ZIF socket. Now take the other end and insert it into the display ZIF on the Raspi. We don't want to have to run USB cables to power the Raspi and the screen, so we're going to use the red and black jumpers from the kit to draw power from the adapter board. Find the pin labeled GND or ground on the adapter board and connect it to the black jumper. Then find the pin labeled 5V or 5 volts and connect the red jumper. Take a look at this pinout schematic and notice that the 5-volt pin on the GPIO is the first pin down on the outside row, and the ground pin is the third down from the top on the outside row. Connect the red jumper to the Raspi 5-volt pin and the black jumper to the ground pin. Then, using the 4 screws in the kit, secure the Raspberry Pi to the standoffs on top of the adapter board. After prepping your card with the latest distro of Raspbian, insert it into the Pi and connect power to the USB port on the adapter board. If you've wired everything properly, everything should turn on, and you should now see the installation process of your favorite Raspi distro.
This is actually a fun project. I've added a few things. So I 3D printed these legs.
Very slick.
They're super and very complicated.
Oh, yeah.
Because I had to go this way and then I had to go that way. It was, yeah.
But it's efficient.
It is efficient. And this is actually, I hate to say it, but especially because I tried this with the Raspi 3.
Mm-hmm.
This is a really nice piece of hardware if you couple it with a fast enough Raspberry Pi.
Right. Yeah. Have you ever tried the first Raspberry Pi with that?
That was no.
No. I wouldn't even bother.
Actually, I don't think you can, because if you look at the first Raspberry Pi, actually, no, you could. So it's got the same headers, but it would be horrifically slow. It would not be fun at all. But this is actually a decent distribution, the Raspberry, and if you use the official screen,
mm-hmm.
if you come back over, if you use the official screen, the nice thing about this is, it's out of the box. There is no further setup. And this is actually, see, look at that. That's
nice.
This is not the 3. This is 2. And it's still kind of snappy.
That's cool.
This is not bad at all. This is the Twit website, and there's a lot of video. There's a lot of content on there.
Definitely.
So if you're looking for a weekend project, I'd say now is the time to get yourself one of these. Get yourself a $35 Raspi. Get yourself mm-hmm. the $60 screen. Make yourself this. I'm actually going to be designing some 3D custom cases for a future project of know-how. And, of course, as always, we'll offer them all to you for free for download and build it the way you want.
You can make, like, a little Raspberry Pi tablet.
Yeah, yeah. I was thinking of, I want a countertop one so that it tucks away,
mm-hmm.
but then, like, you push it and it
folds
down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That would be
right?
cool.
I'm just saying.
Very nice.
Fancy.
So you're not going to be using this for a while, right?
Oh, man. See, stuff just gets stolen around here, folks. But I still love it.
Not bad. And you don't have to do anything special to get the touchscreen to work, huh?
No. That's the thing. I have this. So I got this a long time ago. This was a 2.4-inch touchscreen shield.
Itty bitty.
This was such a pain in the butt to get working. There was like 15 different packages I had to download, and they didn't install properly. So it was one of you've gone through this.
I have.
Where you muck up the installation, and I'm like, well, I could figure what I did, or I could just start over. And I always started over. That's yeah. I did no configuration. This is literally out of the box. That's exactly how it looked when
I
first got it.
That's cool. Because so the last project, the security cam project I've been doing, I basically just went with Terminal. I was like, I don't need a UI. No. It just slows things down. I'm just going to do everything through Terminal. I might have to mess around with that now if I get a touchscreen.
Especially if you can get your hands on a Raspberry 3.
Well,
fastness.
Maybe I can.
No, just stop it. Go away. Folks, we know that this has been a lot of information, and believe it or not, we're going to give you step-by-step, both for his security camera installation and for my Raspberry screen. And also, for the people who were confused by my brain fart at the end of the second segment, if you want to see all the formulas and all the different ways to measure your power so you can find out how long your batteries last, you can find that, too, on our show notes page, which, Brian, they can go to where to find them?
twit.tv/KH. That's where you'll want to go to find any of our past episodes, download past episodes, subscribe to the show, and of course, you know, that's where all the notes are. If you want to find out what West Virginia means from this episode, why we kept saying that over and over.
West Virginia. Yeah.
Then you go there.
And also, don't forget that if you want to support the show, because we do this out of love. We do this because we enjoy what we're doing. But if you want to support the show, the best way to do it is to subscribe. Get a download of this show.
Tell your friends.
Go ahead and again, go to the twit.tv/KH. There's a drop-down menu. Subscribe. Get the feed that you want. The audio version, the video version, the high-definition video version. But when you download each and every single week, that's the best way to make sure that Know How will always be able to bring you the coolest things that we can possibly find.
That's right. Actually, it's probably a good time to mention that we're doing surveys, too.
Yes, we are.
So go to twit.tv/survey, and you can check off the boxes for your favorite episodes.
And tell them more know-how. We want more know-how. that's how we get more shows.
Yeah.
Also, don't forget that we have a YouTube page. You could go to youtube.com/knowhow. And when you go there, you'll actually find content that does not make it here onto the stream. It's only available on our YouTube page. I try to do one a week. I don't always make it there because Twit has me traveling around the
Maybe
world.
Maybe I should upload some of the security footage I have of Burke wandering around in the basement. What's he doing?
It's like Burke just wanders aimlessly for hours. It's so strange.
He's got so much free time.
Also, don't forget that you can find our community. Right?
Yes, you can. Okay, so that's why I was scrolling down with your mouse there. The link does work. If you go to gplus.to/twitkh, that will take you to our Know How Google Plus page.
Yeah, and once you're there, go ahead and post pictures of your projects or videos. Ask questions, or even better, answer the questions of some of the new young DIYers and builders who come into the Know How community. It's how we participate. And your projects and your questions may end up right here on the show.
No, the coolest thing I just saw recently was when I was on the Google Plus page was, you know how we did routers versus switches?
Mm-hmm.
People were making diagrams of how they were setting up their new systems.
And that's what we love. When you outdo us, when you take our projects and you run with them, when you find a better way to do a 3-router dumb network, great, fantastic. Please post it. We love to see that. In fact, that's how we know that we've done a good job. When you do a much better job than we do, it means, we can move on. So do that. Again, go to the Google Plus page and look for Know How. But that's not the only place they'll find us on the socials.
No. If you want to see more of a behind the scenes or what may be coming up, you can follow us on Twitter. I am at @cranky_hippo.
And I am at @PadreSJ. And you can also find our director.
Mm-hmm.
His name is Alex Gumbel. Gumbel? It's Gumbel, right?
It's something like that.
It's like the newscaster? Yeah.
You can
find him
Gumbel.
At @ANELF3.
If it wasn't for him, this show would be probably 2.5 hours long.
Yes, it would be. Until next time, I'm Father Robert Ballasaire.
And I'm Brian Burnett.
And now that you know how,
have a slice of pie. I was sitting on that one.
Yeah, you were. I could tell. Like, oh, he's got something.